We got quite a bit of material to cover this morning, so I won't get started. Sometimes with the younger classes, I say, I hope everybody's wearing their tennis shoes. We got a lot of ground to cover today. But again, not as much as Mike had to cover Wednesday night. All right, so as we're talking about Moses and the giving of the book of Deuteronomy, what is Moses trying to accomplish with the giving of this book, with these speeches? That's right. A reminder of what they're supposed to do. Yeah. Don't fear. Yeah. I'm not going to be with you much longer. You're just going to have to go this by yourself. And the fear of anyone who knows there's this great people that you've cared about, that every time that they've sinned, you've fallen down between them and the punishment, begging God, hey, please, spare them. I'm not going to be there to do that anymore. And that's kind of the mindset Moses has as he starts this. And as we looked at kind of the outline of the book, in the first class, we looked at do not be afraid. And he reminded them all he had already done for them. We're going to see just touch on that again this morning just a little bit. But he reminds them of everything he's done for them. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of their giants. Don't be afraid of their fortified cities. Don't be scared. In that first class, but more, Mike picked up with, beware lest you forget. Don't forget who I am. Don't forget who you are. Beware lest you forget these things that have happened to you. And keep the laws. He put the laws back before them, reminded them of the laws. And if you, you know, I kind of noticed the class Wednesday night sounded a little bit more to me like the Proverbs, right? At the speed Mike had to cover it, it almost sounded like a class in the Proverbs. Blip, blip, here's the law, keep it. Here's another piece of the law. And that was our last class. Well, today we're going to cover the blessings and the curses. And just by the way, blessings and the curses, is this brand new to the people? Have they heard this before? Where at? Put you on the spot. About Leviticus, about chapter 26 for us. Now, they wouldn't have thought of it as Leviticus 26. But here he is, reminding the people again, the blessings and the curses. We're going to remind them of the covenant that they've entered into. The basic covenant we've been talking about all along is what? I will be your God if you'll be my people. And when we start looking at this, and as you look at the book of Deuteronomy, look at the number of times that little two-letter word, if, is there. If you will keep my commands, I'll do these things for you. All of these great things, all these blessings will happen if you're obedient, if you keep my commands, if you do the things you were told to do. But sadly, we're going to end the day up with God telling Moses and Joshua, you know, one of the last things Moses hears from God before he can go up to Mount Nebo to overlook the land that they're about to take and die is these people are going to turn away. They're going to fall. They're going to rebel against you. So that's our outline for today, and then Lord willing, Mike will finish the quarter out Wednesday night. I tried to make the font as big as I could, and I think Mike kind of alluded to this passage at the end. This passage to me kind of sets the stage for today's lesson very well. We're going to start in chapter 27, but this is the end of chapter 26. The day that the Lord your God commands, you will observe the statutes and the judgments. Therefore, you shall be careful to observe them. Notice that section in green, with all your heart and all your soul. You know, we come to the New Testament, we see, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, right? That's not new. We think of the law as these are a physical people, it's a physical law, but this is what God wanted from them too. He wanted them to love Him with all their heart, with all their soul, and keep these commandments and observe these things with all their heart and all their soul. And then He reminds them of their part of the covenant, the part they've agreed to. Today, you have proclaimed the Lord to be your God. You've taken Him on as your God. You shall walk in His ways and keep His statutes, His commandments, His judgments, and that you will obey His voice. Okay, there is the people's part. Okay, you have proclaimed the Lord, you have said, I am His people. Also today, here's God's part. The Lord has proclaimed you to be His special people. Just as He promised you that you should keep all of His commandments, and that He will set you high above all the nations, and that He has made in praise, in name, and in honor, and that you may be a holy people to the Lord, just as He has spoken. So here it is. Keep His commandments with all your heart and all your soul. You have agreed to this. You've come in and you're a part of this covenant. You've agreed to be a part of this covenant. Keep His commandments and He will bless you. And He will do the things that He has promised you that He would do. So the first thing He tells them to do, when you go over, beginning in chapter 27 and verse 1, it says, when you go over the Jordan and you get to the other side and you begin to take this land that I've given you this day, I want you to take white, large, white, uncut stones. No tool has touched them. Take them, set them up, whitewash them with lime or plaster, a mixture like what we would think of as plaster, and write the words of this law on them. Now, we've got enough from our study of Deuteronomy already. Why does He want them to do it? So they won't forget. A reminder to the people. Go back to chapter 6. What did He say about the children? How did He want them to teach the children? It is frontless between your eyes. Talk about it when you lay down, when you get up, on the doorpost, as you're going in and out of the house. Everywhere about you, surround yourself with this law. And this continues as they go over to cross over Jordan. They're to take 12 stones, set them up as they cross in. I won't get too far into the next quarter, but set it up when they cross the land. And why was it they were supposed to stack those stones up? When what happens? When your children ask, you tell them, this is what the Lord did for us when He brought us out of the land of Egypt, when He did this, when He did this, when He did this. So time and again, set these stones up and write the law on it to remind the people. Set these stones up, and when your children ask, tell them, what's Moses scared about? Not this generation that he's talking to, but he's worried about the next generation and the next generation. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. So take these large stones, and I don't know if you can see it, and I have no idea if these are. I mean, these are some pictures of some ancient stones. I'm not even going to begin to claim that it is, but I hope it puts a picture before us of these stones, white in nature, with the laws written on it before the people. Now he says, they're not going to do this kind of immediately as soon as they get across the Jordan. He also tells them, I want you to build an altar on Mount Ebal. I like the way he's calling the places, the names, by name, before they cross the Jordan, before they've taken on their first battle. He's telling them what they're going to do after the Battle of Jericho. And they go up to Mount Ebal, and I want you to build an altar there. And again, that altar shall be of uncut stones. No tool of iron shall be used in the building of that altar. And I want you to offer up a peace offering. Sacrifice a peace offering to the Lord. But I kind of wanted to put this map up and zoom in. You can see here is, they're camped in the plains of Moab. They'll cross over in the beginning of Joshua. We'll have these battles through here. But then they come up here to Shechem, which is a city that's kind of between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. That is the travels that they do right there at the very beginning. And that this is where this will take place. So get the geography of this in mind as they go in and as they take the land. He tells them, I want you to take the tribes and divide them in half. And on Mount Gerizim, later, the side for the blessings that'll be hollered. This is something he's telling them now that they're going to do in the coming weeks. They're not at Mount Gerizim. They're not at Mount Ebal. They've got time before they get there, but when you get there, I want you to take the tribes and I want you to divide them up. And at Mount Gerizim, I want Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin. And then take the other six tribes and put them across on Mount Ebal, or the mount where the curses will be announced. And that's Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali. So you can kind of see, and this picture is actually from Trent and Rebecca that have been over there for some time. I thought it was one of the better pictures I've seen of Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. You see, you have these two mounts. They come in easily to face one another. But another point that I hope you can see is, it's been proven time and again, that between Mount Gerizim on this side and Mount Ebal on this side, this is a really tight, zoomed in view. There's about a 1 mile area right here that is this natural amphitheater. Wonder if my God said go here, right? Go to this area, divide half to this side of the mountain, divide half to this side of the mountain, and right in this area there is this natural amphitheater that whatever is said can easily be heard. And we've all seen amphitheaters where you actually let the land give you the volume, the sound effects, the microphones, the sound system, so to speak. So here they are, and they divide into two on each side of the land. All right. Now, think about this for just a minute. You've taken, and just part, Levites aren't the only one that's on Mount Gerizim on the side over here. Levites is just one of the other six tribes that's on this side. But he says, when you get there, one of the things I want you to do is I want the Levites to read out these curses and let all the peoples say amen. The Levites wouldn't have been the most numerous, but we're talking on either side of the mountain, hundreds of thousands of people. Okay? If we was to take it in this room and kind of divide this room up, and I was to say this center section was the Levites, and then the two outside sections were of the different tribes, what we would have is this center section would read out the curse, and then everybody in chorus would come in and say amen. Now, when the word amen, what does it mean? So be it. Let it be. So when the curse is read, and the people as a whole say, so be it, let it be, what's happening here? What's going on? Was that out? They're confirming it. Unity. Can they go back later and complain when one of these curses come upon them? When I say let it be, I affirm, yes, that is true, and then later I commit one of these things and the curse falls upon me. Well, who said it? I said it. So the Levites in chapter 27, picking up in about verse 15. Think about how it would have sounded as the Levites from one side of this amphitheater would holler out with a very loud voice, cursed is the one who makes a carved and molded image, an abomination to the Lord, the work of the hands of the craftsman, and sets it up in secret. Cursed is that man. And the whole congregation would say amen. Cursed is the one who mistreats his father or his mother. Amen. Cursed is the one who moves his neighbor's landmark, and all the congregation would say amen. Cursed is the one who would take this blind man and lead him off to astray, and the congregation would say amen. Cursed is the one who would pervert justice, view a stranger, the fatherless, the widows, the ones that can't take care of themselves, and the congregation would say amen. Cursed is the one who would lie with his father's wife, and the people would say amen. Cursed is the one who would lie with any kind of animal, and the people would say amen. Cursed is the one who would lie with his mother-in-law. Amen. Cursed is the one who would attack his neighbor secretly. Amen. Cursed is the one who would take a bribe to slay the innocent person. Amen. And lastly, in verse 26, cursed is the one who does not confirm all the words of this law. In other words, and everything else. And the people would say, amen. So here we have it. It's been set before us. The curses has been placed. Do we know exactly what the curses are? Well, by the end of chapter 28, it's going to be a pretty grim picture that's painted before us. But at this point, whatever these curses are, they've been explained and they've been agreed upon. Again, covenant is two people. God has placed the covenant out there. We began with, today it has been in your hearing, right? And you've agreed to this covenant. So you would have the curses proclaimed from one side of the mountain, but then just a raging amen from both sides as well. And this brings us to the blessings in chapter 28. In these first 14 verses of chapter 28,
Three times we see the word if. If you will obey. I talked about it in the entire book, but in this section, chapter 28 and verse 1, if you'll diligently obey the voice of the Lord, verse 9, if you will keep the commandments, and then again in verse 13, if you heed the commandments of the Lord. Now the blessings that he's going to talk about are pretty amazing. It would be hard-pressed to not feel really excited at the end of what God says, I'm going to give you. I'm going to give these things to you. Not only what I'm going to give to you, but these things are going to come above, come upon you, and there's nothing you can do about it, right? These things are going to come upon you. They're going to overtake you because, why? You have obeyed the voice of the Lord. Now, just kind of let, as these verses go out, let it kind of sink in what is said. Blessed shall you be in the city and in the country. Nothing's left out. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground, the increase of your herd, the increase of your cattle, the offspring of your flocks, everything you have. Blessed shall you be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in. Blessed shall you be when you go out. Your enemy is going to cause, God will cause your enemy to come up and attack you from one way, and after you get through, he's going to flee seven. Right? Attack comes from one, you're going to attack back, and they will flee seven ways before you. The Lord will command these blessings upon your storehouse and all which is set to your hand, and he will give you this blessing in the land that he has given you. Now, he's established this for you if you will keep his commandments. Verse 10, we actually see about the people in the world around them. They will be afraid. Now, that sounds like a small benefit, but just think about how great that benefit is. If you're going in and you're at attack and it's going to be war after war after war, well, in Jericho, the people were terrified of them before they ever got there. Do you think that's a nice thing in battle? That these people are scared to death and terrified of you before you ever show up to start the battle. The battle's half won before you get there. And that's what he says will happen. Now, one of the things I see, and we're about to transition over to the curses, but is there a point that can be made? How many verses is given to the blessings? Same is true. I did go back and make sure the same kind of ratio is true in Leviticus as well. 14 verses, 1 through 14, given to the blessings. Now, is there any way that people cannot look at this and be excited and think how great this is going to be? Blessed in every way, in the city, in the country, the kneading bowl, the fruit of their body. Their enemies are going to run from them. Anything you could dream of, they're saying, here it is. It's going to happen for you. But then 15 through 68, to the curses. Does God take both the good and the bad? Yes, he addresses both the good and the bad. But what might we glean from the volume of the verses for the curses versus the blessings? The blessings will be better. What might they need a little bit more of? Warning. Yeah, when you disobey. And we need to do that today. We need both the good and the bad. But you know what? We need a pretty heavy dose of the warnings of the curses that's going to become when we sin. And I think there's a point to be made about the sheer volume of verses. But at the very end of this section, and if you will look down in verse 13. He will make you the head and not the tail. I've read this. I can't tell you how many times in life I've read this. But this time, that phrase just kind of jumped off the page at me and said, he will make you the head and not the tail. What imagery comes to your mind when you read, he'll make you the head, not the tail? He goes on to say, I'll put you above and not below. But what image does it bring to mind? You'll be the head and not the tail. I'm okay with silence. Okay, it's getting a little more awkward. What picture does it paint for you? The head and not the head is in control. I have to say, first thing that comes to mind is some animal here, right? What is there any honor in being the tail? Is there any control in being the tail? I will make you head, I'll make you the head, and not the tail. You will be in control. You'll be the head. You'll be leading the way. You'll have this place of honor if you think of it as an animal. The place of honor versus the tail. We're going to get there in just a minute, but if you go on and look, and one of the things that I think it really caused it to jump off in verse 44, toward the end of this section on the curses, he actually says the opposite of this. He will be the head, and you will be the tail. If you disobey, and all these curses come upon you, then he will be your enemy, your he. The enemy is the he. He will be the head, and you will be the tail. To me, that draws a pretty vivid picture of something, kind of for him to summarize this at the end of his statements about, do I want to be the head or the tail? Right? If I'm here and I'm in the hearing, do I want to be the head or the tail? So here we have it, and we switch over into the curses. We've spent about 14 verses on the blessings that's going to come, and no one can doubt when the blessings are mentioned what it's going to be like. But for every curse, blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the country, blessed shall be your baskets and your kneading bowls. If you look down at about verse 16, cursed shall you be in the city, cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, the increase of your cattle, the cattle, the offspring of your flock. Cursed shall it be when you come in and when you go out. Everything you do, you're coming in, you're going out, everything you accomplish to do, set out to do, is going to be cursed. Right? Everything you set out to do, if you obey God, is going to be blessed. It's going to increase tenfold. Everything you set out to do, if you don't obey God, is going to come to naught. You're going to be in more debt when you're done than when you started. And he continues. Talks about the plague. These plagues, verse 21, the plagues are going to cling to you. Right? Kind of like Velcro or something that you just can't get off and throw away. These plagues, they're going to cling to you as you go through this time if you will not obey, if you will not hear. Your crops will fail. You will suffer the plagues and diseases. You'll die from fevers, infections, droughts. Your enemies will defeat you. But remember before, they will attack you one way and they'll flee seven. Now, you'll attack one way and you'll be fleeing seven. Right? So for every good that there was, there is now the negative that will come upon them. Your enemies will defeat you. You will go insane with fear, anxieties, frustrations. You'll lose your mind from what's going on around and about you. And if you think about it, and especially if you allow yourself in history, the good thing here is knowing the history well enough to go forward in time. What was the condition right before each of these, you know, Israel and Judah was taken captive? Think about how bleak the situation got, especially as we continue to go into these curses. You'll be engaged to a woman, but you will not go to bed with her. You will build a house. Somebody else is going to live in it. You will kill your oxen will be taken, they'll be killed, but you won't get to eat any of the meat that is going on there. Your sons and your daughters, they'll be given to a new people. They will no longer be your sons and daughters, but they will be given to a new people. And the imagery at the very end of this is scary, sad, and sickening. The most delicate of your men, or the most sensitive of your men, the man in your group that would do the absolute least to harm another person, he's going to turn. He's going to turn on his children. He's going to turn on his wife. The most delicate of the ladies, the one that is said that would not even put their feet to the sole of the ground, that's pretty delicate, right? The lady that wouldn't even take and step off on the ground and walk around, the most delicate of the ladies, they're going to turn on the husband that they loved, the offspring, the children, to the point that the afterbirth, they're going to take it, they're going to hide the afterbirth after the child has been born. Why? They're that hungry in the siege. They have nothing to eat. So they're going to take the afterbirth and they're going to eat it. That's how bad this situation is going to be. They're going to hide and they're going to take and they're going to kill their children so that they can prepare the child as a meal and eat the child. How far we've come from the blessings and the curses, and how much we actually need to have these curses kind of put before us of how bad it will be. you will be taken away captive amongst your enemies. This is all going to happen. And who is in control? This point is going to be made in chapter 30 or 31 a whole lot more clear. But with all of these things, I've set before you the blessings, how great life can be, and the curses. Who controls what happens to them? God's in control. Exactly. Exactly. If I'm put together the four things that I just heard there, God is in ultimate control of what's going to happen. But their choices is going to control whether it's the blessings or the curses. Now let's take a step back to all those amens they said. You've heard this section now about the curses. Now think back to everyone who mistreats his father or mother shall be cursed. Amen. Oh, wait. This is what you mean? You know, this is kind of what we know to be the curses. Doug? Excellent. You're reading my notes again. No, that's spot on. This lesson is just as true for us today because look, what's been put before us? Heaven and hell. Now, this is a pretty grim physical description of the curses that's going to happen to them. Hell's going to be worse than anything that can be described here. These are a beautiful description of the blessings that's going to happen. Heaven's going to be far beyond anything that we can imagine that was described in the blessings. Who's in control? God's in control. What determines the outcome? The choices the people make. Just like here. I think, Doug, you're spot on. The choices that the people make here, as well as here, the choices that we make determines the ultimate outcome between the blessings and the curses. And kind of bringing this, since time doesn't allow us to spend the whole time on this section, bringing this to the end with that vision of your enemy. He will be the head. And you'll be the tail that's kind of pulled around behind. No honor there. Nothing there. So, to the people, Moses is saying, I'm going to be gone. What are you going to do with this after I'm gone? Will you have the blessings? Will you have the curses? The sad answer is, they'll have both. But he goes directly out of this in chapter 29 into a section on the covenant. Now, this covenant is a lot like what they went through. And he reminds them back to Horeb, Mount Sinai, the giving of the commandments. The original, I will be your God if you will be my people. Now, this one has a tendency to be a little bit more about the land specifically. What you will do to be able to keep the land, to do well in the land, to prosper in the land that you're about to be given. And again, they're about to undertake a pretty serious, they've had some war battle, some experience with war, but not a lot. They're about to go in and they're about to have war and battles, but they haven't had in the past. And the things that they do, this covenant that they're going to be a part of, if they will do these things, going back to the blessings and the curses, it will have a lot to do with how well they do in the land. And Moses goes back and begins to remind them of some of the things that they have seen. He says, you have seen. And to me, to look at these people that have actually come out of the land of Egypt and say, you have seen, those three words to me is pretty powerful. What have they seen? Just throw some things out. What have they seen? I'll start. The Red Sea. They've seen the plagues in Egypt. They've seen the power of God. They've seen the Red Sea part. What else have they seen? They've seen the mountain shake and quiver as God would speak to them with the thunderings, the lightning. Exactly. All the way here when he says, in Sihon and Og, they came out against you. And that land now belongs to who? Reuben, Gad, and half tribe of Manasseh. you have seen. The amazing things that they have seen. So he starts us out with, you have seen. Going back to God is in control. Or back to what we started out the quarter this book out with, do not fear. They have no reason to fear. You have seen what God can do. And again, does it all come down to, are they better soldiers? Are they better war planners? Are they better, stronger, faster? What does it come down to? Will they what? What's that? Will they trust in God? Will they obey? Will they keep His commandments? Their ultimate success comes down to the choice they make. Right? It all comes down to the choices that they make. And again, I think, once again, we talk about it not being one of the points that kind of sticks out to me is these laws, the commandments. Even in their day, even in their time, we talk about it being a physical kingdom and a physical covenant. But he says, hear them and do them. Right? This is a thing of action. Hear them and do them. And this is to everybody, to the leaders, to the elders, to the officers, to the wives, to the children, and to those that aren't even born yet, is this covenant that's being offered up and told to the people and put before them, for them to fulfill and to keep. Obey. And the question is still the same. Obey the covenant, keep my words, keep my commandments, and all these blessings that we just got through talking about will be yours. And he continues in this, but if you disobey, all of these curses. And if you put yourself in their place and you think about the blessings and the curses, your last impression that you've been left with is the curses. That's a pretty miserable picture that was painted with curses. So again, if you disobey, there stands the curses before you. Now, he begins to take on some different things here. And he says, there may be though that one that's among you. And I think it's in verse 18. There may be those among you, man or woman or family or tribe, whose heart is turned away from the Lord our God, to go and serve the gods of these nations, that they may not be among you, a root bearing bitterness or wormwood. So if you have these people that's among you, that's a root bearing bitterness and wormwood, first, is that a good thing for the group as a whole? Not then and not today either. You know, you think of a wormwood, you can think of termites. A house that's infested by termites ain't going to last very long. We got enough, everybody knows that, and we got enough home builders to know and have probably seen the damage that, you know, something like that can do. Well, this root of bitterness, this wormwood, what will it do to the people of God? It'll destroy them. But it's amazing how it only takes one, or it only takes two. A tribe, you have a family, a tribe that's turned away. Not the whole family, not the whole tribe that's turned away, but this one family, this one tribe, that maybe their hearts turned away from the Lord and go and serve other gods of the other nations, and they will be among you a bitter root of bitterness, or a root of bearing bitterness or wormwood. This horrible thing that's there amongst you. And what about this man that's puffed up in his heart and says, okay, that's good. These curses, these blessings, they're good for everybody else, but I don't have to do that. God makes it clear. He will see every one of these curses that we're talking about today will come upon him. And then, toward the end of that, as we're approaching chapter 30, he starts this language, when the people rebel against God and receive these curses. Again, we talked about, go into the land, I have given it to you. Isn't this very definite, positive, it's going to happen language? Has it happened yet? No. But God is beginning to give Moses, giving Joshua the idea that when the people rebel against God and receive the curses, it's going to happen. They are going to rebel. They are going to receive the curses. The land will look as if it has been ravaged by fire. the concept, you remember Sodom and Gomorrah, as fire and brimstone comes down and rains upon the land, that land looked pretty desolate after it's done. And when people see the land of Israel, and sometimes even people see the land of Israel today and said, what was the big fuss about? Why did everybody want this? It's desolate, it's barren, it doesn't raise anything. When you hear somebody say that, please remember, let's take them to Deuteronomy chapter 29. Why is the land the way it is? Disobedience. They got the curses. That's right. That land that was flowing with milk and honey, that was described as flowing by milk and honey by the spies, been repeated several times now as a land flowing with milk and honey that you're about to get. It's going to be a land that people's going to look at, and it's after fire, as if fire and brimstone had rained down on it, and say, what's up? What happened to this land? And the people are going to answer, what happened to this land is the people, God's people, they disobeyed. And he rejected them, and all the curses came upon this land. And now, it is a land that no longer flows with milk and honey. And again, I think that is something that is very, very important for us to remember still today. Yes. Excellent point. God cannot, for those that can't hear, God cannot lie. If he promised us heaven to those that are faithful, to those that are faithful, will receive heaven. But to those he's promised hell for being unfaithful, he can't lie about that either. To those will receive the punishment. And again, we hit the point. If you look in chapter 30, verse 1, it will come to pass when all these things come upon you, the blessings and the curses. You know, it's an amazing thing to think about God, the one who talks about tomorrow as if it was yesterday. And here's yet another example of God talking about when it comes to pass after the blessings and curses. He's talking about tomorrow as if it was the way we talk about yesterday. These things that are going to happen. But the beautiful thing in chapter 30 and verse 2, he says, after this happens, remember how horrible it was of the mother who is, and remember if you go to the kings, the mothers who had the battle and who had the fight that said, please make her give up her son. We ate my son yesterday and today we're supposed to cook her son that we may not die. And now she won't give her son up. That's how bad it got. Well, now it shall come to pass, right? We're talking about the future as if it was the past. When all these things shall come upon you, the blessings and the curses that I've set before you, and you call them to mind among the nations, when the Lord will drive you out. Verse 2. And you return to the Lord your God and obey his voice according to all that I command you today and your children with all your hearts and with all your soul. Okay. What are they doing here? Aren't they going full circle? They've turned, they've repented, they've gone away from God, they've received the curses, and here we have this people. They're doing what? They're repenting. And they're coming back to God with all their hearts and with all their souls. He says, to those people, I will bring them back from captivity. After all this has happened, you've gone into captivity. Is this something that the Jews are still looking for to come in the future? Well, maybe some. Again, should they be? No. The things he's talking about here, this Jerusalem that is to come, again, after you've gone into captivity, I will bring you back. And he has done that. We can look to Ezra, we can look to Nehemiah, we can look to the returns that happen in the future. I'll have compassion on you, gather you from all the nations whom God has scattered you, and if you have been driven out from the farthest part under heaven, from there God will gather you. No matter where you go, God can find you, and he will bring you back. And verse 6 is also a very pretty thing. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants to love the Lord your God with all your hearts, all your souls, that you may live. And even after these things, you'll put the curses on your enemies, verse 7. And you will again obey the voice, verse 8. Verse 10, we go back to that little two-letter word, if. If you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep His commandments and His statutes that are written in the book of the law, and if you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. All these good things are going to happen, that if, even after they've rebelled and gone away and come back, that if is still there. He will bring you back, and it happened. Now, this whole section ends with something that I think is very important for us. Kind of hard to put all this together, but I think what Moses says at the end kind of does summarize it. Joshua's fixing to go in and take over and drive and lead the people in. But he has said at the end of this section, today, I've set before you life and death, good and evil. What's going to drive their choice? Choose their choices. Choose life. Right? You have the choice. Blessings or curses. Choose the blessings. We have the choice. Heaven or hell. Choose heaven. I've set before you life and death. Choose life. These commands that I've given you, they're not too hard. They're not so far into the heavens that you say, who's going to go up into the heavens and get them and bring them down so that we can obey them? They're not so far away that you're going to say, who's going to go into the depths of the sea or far away country and get them and bring them back so that we may see them, understand them, behold them. They're not that hard. They're near to you. They're dear to you. They're in your heart. Keep them. And with this, he commissions Joshua to go in and to take over. And he says to the people, I'm 120 years old. I'm about to die. Joshua is the one that's going to go before you and take you into this land. Obey him. Listen to him. Be strong and of good courage. We end right where we started two classes ago. Be strong and be courageous. Do not fear. Be strong and be of good courage. He says it to the people. And then a few verses later, he turns around and says it to Joshua. Be strong and be of good courage. Don't be scared of these people. Just go in and take the land. He ends it with the Song of Moses. And I knew we wouldn't have time to do the Song of Moses today. But with everything that's been said, a good review, getting ready for the next class, is ring the Song of Moses. And at the end of the day, if they'll read and learn and memorize that Song of Moses and sing it out throughout time, they'll know that any punishment they receive was due to the choices they made. Thanks for your time and your attention.